We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Striking Gold, your 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. My name is Rob Lauder. I cover the 49ers for all of you fine folks on the other side of the speaker. Appreciate you tuning in. I appreciate you being here. How we all doing? I am in the midst of spring break. I don't know who else we have out there listening that is getting to enjoy the fruits of spring break. We've got Easter coming up for all those who celebrate. That's always a good time. So it's an interesting time of the year. It's a fun time of the year. Winter is exiting. Spring is showing up. Central Valley's getting a little bit of rain. The air is clean. Sky's blue. When it's not raining, you know, grass is green. Everything's just rocking and rolling. You know, it's a fun time of year. It's a fun time of year. Baseball's having their opening day. Today, I'm watching baseball. You know what I realized? One of my complaints. Actually, hold on. In a little bit. This episode, as always, of course, and for 2024, is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is daily fantasy sports made easy. All you're going to do is you're going to go to prizepicks.com. You're going to use the promo code GOLD. Not just prizepicks.com, but prizepicks.com/GOLD. Okay? Then use the promo code GOLD, and they're going to match any first deposit up to $100. PrizePicks.com/gold. Do it. Do it. All right. So anyways, one of my common complaints or one of my complaints with baseball is like, I understand there's way more games being played than football. Way more. But when football is on Mondays, you know exactly what channel it's on. ESPN. When football is on Thursdays, you know exactly what channel it's on, NFL Network. When football, or it's Prime now and NFL Network. And then when you know, football's on Sundays, you know exactly what channel, you know, has a football game. When it's on Sunday night, you know exactly where the football game is. And this could very well be in part due to my, you know, large amounts of ignorance. I don't pay nearly as much attention to baseball as I do football. But I found that watching a baseball game is significantly harder than watching a football game. Like, and it's not on the same channels. The channels aren't as easily accessible. Like, I think Giants baseball is on NBC Sports Bay Area, you know, and that's not, at least between, you know, the subscriptions I pay for, the Dish Network that I bum off my parents, it's not present there. You know, football is very accessible, very easy to find. But baseball, sometimes the game's on ESPN, sometimes it's not. Sometimes the game's on, like, what now? Apple TV Plus has one. I mean, I can't really bitch about that because they did the whole Peacock thing this year. But anyways, at least right now for where I currently sit, it seems like it's a lot harder to just turn on the TV and watch a baseball game. You know, it's always on some obscure channel. MLB Network has a ton of them, you know, and that's not part of normal subscriptions. It's just kind of like, and maybe I'm overcomplicating it. And if I am, if you have the solution to my problem, you know, I guess above anything, I'd prefer to watch Giants baseball and then go from there. But any baseball, I enjoy baseball. I'd like to watch it. You know, I'd like to have it up in my classroom all day while we do our thing, that sort of thing. But it just always seems like it's on a channel I don't have, which whether that makes me cheap or it's just inconvenient, I don't know. But it's just like, damn, like, can I just freaking watch some baseball? And it's just, you know, and being at school, the network blocks most of the legal websites, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. So that's my frustrations with baseball. I did watch two games today on ESPN. I don't know if ESPN's getting, you know, a bigger contract or something. Maybe they'll be on ESPN more often. But if there's 18,000 baseball games going on, I should be able to watch one with very little effort at almost any given time without having to find a channel that's not common or, you know, all that stuff. It's just, so that's my problem. Anyways, I wanted to recommend a show to you guys or a mini series, but I mean, I'm already 4.5 minutes in and I haven't even talked about the 49ers. Can I just get in a quick word about Masters of the Air? I have to talk to you guys about this show. It's just wrapped up a couple weeks ago. It's on Apple TV Plus. It is outstanding. It falls right in line with Band of Brothers, The Pacific, and it follows the World War II fighter bomber pilots, more specifically, the 100th group of fighter bomber pilots who earned the nickname the Bloody 100th because of how significant their losses were in World War II. And it's on Apple TV Plus. So if you don't subscribe to that, and I don't either, my mom did, and she's like, here, just log into mine. Even if you don't, you know, even if I hadn't, I still would have just to watch that show. And then you just cancel it after a month or however long it took you. But I would highly recommend you check it out if you didn't already. It's got a great cast. Austin Butler, who's like blowing up in Hollywood. The dude that played Elvis is the main character, along with a lot of other pretty renowned actors and actresses. Just a fantastic show that really kind of shows just how brutal it was to be a World War II fighter bomber pilot or a bomber pilot. Just to illustrate very quickly what it was like to be a bomber pilot in World War II. If you just Google World War II bomber pilot survival rates, the main thing that pops up, the primary answer says 24%. And here's how it breaks down. During the whole war for World War II bomber pilots, 51% of the air crew were killed on operations. Like, you already, if you were a World War II bomber pilot or bomber crewman, you had a 51% chance of going down. Less than a coin flip. And then 13% became prisoners of war. And then it says, also says 12% were killed or wounded in non-operational accidents. Just the danger of being in a plane, around planes, on planes, training on planes. It's just a dangerous job. So again, it was 51% of air crew were killed in battle. 12% were killed in non-operational accidents. And 13% became prisoners of war or people escaping. Only 24% survived the war unscathed. That is unbelievable. In order, and you know your job is insane when World War II bomber pilots, if they completed 25 missions, they were done. They got to go home. You know your job is insane when that goal is even attainable and or it even exists, because the reason it exists is if you've survived 25 missions, you're probably on the brink of a breaking point. And two, not many people survive 25 missions, so it's like a pie in the sky that a lot of guys never hit. Anyways, done talking about it. I don't want to waste your time. You're here for 49er stuff. But check it out, Masters of the Air. Tons of clips on YouTube. I loved it. Produced by Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg. So you know it's going to have some teeth. Absolutely adored it. Check it out. But not for the faint of heart. Again, given those statistics, just know what you're going to see. But very, very cool. Very good. I highly recommend it. All right. So 49ers land, obviously everybody right now is talking about Eric Armstead's kind. I don't know what you want to call it. You know, he's got his own podcast. He put out a bunch of clips on social media, thanking the 49ers fans. And he got very candid with how things broke down in terms of his dealings with the 49ers and why he chose to leave. And it's all pretty eye-opening. I wouldn't say any of it is necessarily a surprise, and I'll kind of give you my feelings on it, but he said he doesn't hold anything against the 49ers, anything against Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, but, and there's a giant but here, so Armstead did feel very disrespected, though. You know, and the hard part about all this is Armstead says on his podcast and his little show that he entered 2024 with the goal of being selected to the Pro Bowl, winning the Super Bowl, and earning an extension, you know, and that he kind of ballparked at 4 years and $80 million. You're a guy like Eric Armstead, and you get that. Like, he's looking at retirement. He's looking at the last big contract and riding off into the sunset. And, I mean, just knowing that right there, just knowing those few things, Pro Bowl, Super Bowl, big extension, I mean, just how haywire things have gone for him. Now, you know, he didn't go to the Pro Bowl, didn't win the Super Bowl. They got close. And he got essentially an extension, but with a different team. You know, he got something close to that contract-ish, but with a different team. And it just shows you that how different his mindset was and his belief in himself and what he wanted to achieve versus where the 49ers were on, especially by the end of the season, on what his value was and what he meant to the team. Because he goes on to say that the 49ers told Eric Armstead that they wanted to extend him and that they wanted him to remain a 49er for life. But it was going to be, and they didn't tell him this at first, but it was going to be for a lot, lot less than his hopes of a $80 million extension. You know, that would be $20 million a year. The 49ers valued Armstead at $6 million a year with incentives up to $8 million. And Armstead, like he said, felt very disrespected. He felt that he wasn't anywhere close to the level he should be compensated, both as a player, person, teammate, and what he brought to the table. He talked about the fact that he watched more film than anybody else. He put more into his body than anybody else. You know, he felt that he truly was worth way more than that. And in a way, he was right, because once he was released from the 49ers, he was signed to a 3-year, $43 million contract. So not necessarily close to the 4-year, $80 million he wanted. He signed a 3-year, $43 million contract with $28 million guaranteed, but he was worth more in the open market than the 49ers were willing to give him. Now, the one thing he doesn't talk about that may have happened was, I'm assuming that $6 million offer with incentives up to $8 was the 49ers' initial offer. Did they go back and forth? Did the 49ers counter? Did Armstead counter? Or was that the offer? Was that the 49ers' bottom line? And then it all just went sideways from there. I don't know. Doesn't really talk about all that. But as you can see, Eric Armstead was right to value himself higher than what the 49ers were willing to give him. He signed a 3-year, $44 million deal with $28 million guaranteed. And if you go back and look at Eric Armstead's contract with the 49ers, at the time of them offering him that $6 million a year deal, his base salary with the 49ers was $17.5 million. So that is over $10 million less than what he was currently making. He had a $28 million cap number, and the 49ers were willing to give him. Now, cap number does not necessarily reflect base salary and what the per year average is, but you can see just how drastic the difference was between what Eric Armstead was going to make, what Eric Armstead wanted to make, and what Armstead ended up being offered from the 49ers. Nowhere near the same ballpark, not even in the same town, not even in the same sports complex, whatever stupid way I can phrase it. But that being said, I don't necessarily think either side was wrong. Obviously, Armstead wasn't wrong. He went and got paid by the Jaguars and Trent Baalke, the guy who drafted him. On the other side, I don't think the 49ers were wrong to value Armstead in that area because they're not necessarily paying him at that point. Once you've entered into the restructure point or the extension talks, you're paying him what you feel his value is going to be in the future going forward. And if at just a quick glance, I'm not, you know, and this could go completely different. And Eric Armstead could play 17 games for the next 3 years. But if you're looking at Armstead's injury history, what he currently has going on, and kind of the way things are going, I don't think the 49ers were necessarily wrong to value Armstead at way less than what he was making. Over the last 2 years, Armstead has missed 13 games. He did come back for the playoffs in both of those years. The 49ers are up against the salary cap. Armstead's going to be 31 this year. He had to have surgery to repair a knee meniscus injury that he played through. He's dealing with plantar fasciitis in his feet. He, you know, and if you just kind of, I don't know, I guess you're, it's always a prediction, right? You have no idea where things are going to go. Armstead's career started off pretty ominous. You know, he played in 8 games as in his second year. He only played in 6 games in his third year. And then he went 16, 16, 16, 17. And then the last 2 years, he's gone 9 and 12. So obviously his career got started out in a way where a lot of people had already written him off. I remember it vividly. And then he developed into an outstanding football player, was able to get healthy and put together a very impressive 4-year stretch. But now you're back to missing a significant amount of games, dealing with significant injuries that require surgery. Plantar fasciitis and his feet injuries tend to be something that stays, that nags. Not the same injuries, but it's kind of like akin to Patrick Willis, who basically said, like, I just couldn't run anymore. My feet were done. And once I didn't have my feet, I knew there was no point to doing any of this. And again, not the same types of injuries, but this could very well be something that the 49ers may be seeing, you know, the downturn in Armstead's career, especially after he's already had a long career. I think he spent 9 years in San Francisco. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, he's going into his 10th season. So I don't necessarily think the 49ers were wrong to kind of take a calculated risk, knowing they're against the salary cap, knowing that something's got to give. One of these high-priced players has to go, and more of them may need to go in the coming years. But, you know, that's how it played out. And again, I don't think either was wrong. Obviously, Armstead's not wrong. He went and got paid. And I don't think the 49ers are wrong either. Is Armstead worth more than $6 to $8 million? Sure. Of course, the market determined that, but I don't think the 49ers were willing to risk that. They weren't in a position to pay him any money that they didn't feel was, you know, there was a possibility it wouldn't pay out or pan out. So, you know, I think that his time with the 49ers comes to a somewhat awkward and unfortunate conclusion, especially because he wanted to remain a 49er for life. 49ers told him they wanted him to stay a 49er for life. It just wasn't going to be at the price he was used to making. You know, and that sucks for a guy that's from Sacramento. That's a big Bay Area native. He does a ton with charity and a ton with the community. But again, I don't think that either side was wrong in this matter because it's the reality in the NFL, the business side of the NFL. You can't pay everybody. And the 49ers may have seen Armstead as more of a liability when it came to the amount of money he was making rather than a contribution, I guess you could say. So, I mean, interesting, but worth talking about. It's just, you know, it is what it is. I mean, that's your analysis. That is the hard-hitting takes that you're going to get here on Striking Gold. It is what it is. That's how it unfolded. And I think it's just one of those things that while the conclusion isn't necessarily pleasant, I don't necessarily think either side was wrong and you kind of just have to move on and be done with it. Okay, where are we at? Where are we at in the pod time-wise? 18 minutes. Let's talk really quickly again about Prize Picks, okay? Just hear me out. Stick with me on these Prize Picks, okay? It's fun. Daily fantasy sports. And like I said, it's fun. It's a good time. You don't have to throw a ton of money at it. You know, like they say, bet responsibly. But I highly encourage you to get on the Prize Picks bandwagon. Daily fantasy sports. At any point, you're picking 2 to 6 players between multiple sports. I mean, baseball just had their opening day. March Madness is in full swing. If you're a hockey person, hockey's on there. Basketball's on there. Professional basketball. And you're just picking 2 to 6 players. You're picking what stat you want to focus on, more or less, and then you're letting it ride. Very, very simple, easy-to-use website. You'll love it. Can't mess it up. You can create a lineup in 60 seconds or less. And it's just so simple to use, and it's a good time. Like I said, and that's kind of what it all boils down to for me. I enjoy playing Prize Picks, and this is coming from somebody who hasn't spent a lot of time in the daily fantasy sports realm, and I enjoyed it. So I encourage you to get on Prize Picks. You're going to go to prizepicks.com/gold, and you're going to use the promo code GOLD. That tells them that you came from the freaking Striking Gold podcast, and you are part of the Striking Gold fam, hashtag, all that good stuff. And what they're going to do is they're going to match any first deposit up to $100. So if you put in, let's choose a random number, $80, you're going to have $160 in your account. You want to go 100, you're going to have 200, anywhere in between. Anywhere in between. PrizePicks.com/gold.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, NFL owners meeting. New stuff, new rules, new fun things, new visits from the idea fairy. I am Googling something right now. I think I'm going to need it in a little bit. Let me see. Okay, yeah. All right, got it. Just making sure. Okay. So, NFL owners meeting. And, of course, the star of the NFL owners meeting. Hold on. No, okay, I'm still recording. So I opened like a weird tab that was on top of my other tab, and I was like, did I just click out of my recording? Okay, so anyways, my ineptitude aside, I apologize. One of the, you know, the stars of the NFL owners meeting, and not in a good way, was the banning of the so-called, a ton of emphasis on so-called, hip drop tackle. Now, raise your hand if you are already tired of hearing those three words put together. And I know most of y'all are raising your hand right now. Now, to me, I don't know when it was first given that name or when it came around, but to me, the moment it was given that name, you knew it was going away. Not that name in particular. The moment they gave it a name, you knew it was going away. It's a ridiculous name. I mean, arm forward throw or hands up catch, like, congrats on putting a few words together. Like it's just the name itself tells you how stupid it all is. But hey, congrats on creating another ambiguous rule that officials can pick and choose when to enforce it. It's just stupid. And look, I'm not necessarily one of those kind of goobers that are just like, oh, it's flag football now. No, it's not flag football. It's clearly not flag football. And we're not anywhere close to the NFL doing something that drastic. It'll never come to that point. But you know what? Super funny example. How many of you guys have seen, hold on, what's it called? Oh yeah. How many of you guys have seen Starship Troopers? I guess I'm asking raise your hand type questions like the teacher that I am, even though I cannot see your hands. I'm going to Google that too. But in Starship Troopers, there's a scene where they play football in these like super sort of futuristic looking uniforms. They have like helmets that are like newer versions of the old NFL helmets. You know, they look like bicycle helmets sort of, but they've got uniforms on that where the pads are kind of like built into the uniform. And look, I understand this is like really silly, but there is a part of me that feels like a little less pads would go a little bit further. Like, I'm not saying, you know, not like a rugby type of thing, but like, I feel like, you know, if you're really worried about, anyways, watch the football scene in Starship Troopers. And I don't know, I feel like there's some sort of reality where football could be more like that in terms of what they're wearing. And there may even be a way in which that scientifically would decrease the amount of injuries. Anyways, horrible, horrible tangent to go off of, but still pretty funny. Still worth a laugh. Don't take it too seriously. And we're just talking. So my problem with the hip drop tackle, is to me, you're putting defensive players in a vulnerable position, trying to get them to change what was kind of a natural movement in that specific situation. And you're going to force them into something awkward. Like, if you read the rule on that banned the hip drop tackle, the first thing it says is the first part of it is that a player needs to do in order to meet the criteria for a hip drop tackle is to wrap the opponent up, which is also the beginning of every form tackle in football. So we're off to a great start. The first criteria is something that's going to be met on almost every single tackle. So good luck enforcing that. You know what I mean? Like, you're off to a bad start. Now I get it. The second part is, you know, you wrap them up and then you basically make yourself weightless and you throw your legs out in front of you and you drop down on the back of the runner's legs. But it's like, if you look at somebody in that situation that's making a tackle from that angle in that moment, like, and you watch the clips of the hip drop tackle and then ask yourself what should they do instead? You know, and it's, I mean, I understand the intent here is that, you know, there's a lot of players that have been injured on that play, but you're also going to, it seems like you're going to end up injuring defenders who can no longer kind of, they can't do anything with their momentum. They can't swing their hips around. They can't swing their legs around. They've got to hit the player, wrap up, and then go limp and possibly just drag behind the player or take a, you know what I mean? Like, I'm watching these tackles take place and I'm wondering what these defensive players can do instead of swing their hips in that moment. It just seems like it's going to make, at least for a while, until kind of maybe a new form is taught, and there is like more of like the gator roll tackle where you wrap them up and then you just throw yourself to the right. But if you think about doing that from the side of an opponent and they're running past you and you do that gator roll, you're still throwing yourself onto their legs. You know, whether or not you're placing your hips and your legs forward, or you're just grabbing and then rolling kind of like towards your shoulder, like going down towards your shoulder. I'm not going to say this is not good podcast content in terms of just all of us together using our imaginations to figure out what would work. But it just like, it seems like a very classic example of here's the problem, but I have no solution. All I'm telling you is you can't do this, but what should you do? Figure it the hell out. You know, I think the biggest problem is that once again in the NFL, you're backing defensive players further into a corner, creating just another rule to make playing the game that much more difficult for defensive players. And I mean, at some point, you have to be okay with the inherent risk of playing football. And there, it seems like there's a road you could go down where, you know, a player is only allowed to make one cut and then they have to run north and south. Does that really seem like that crazy of a rule now that from where we're at. Not to me. Why would you make a rule about a player only being able to cut one time? Well, I mean, so many players are injured when a player makes a cut and they try and break down or stop their momentum. And then you have players running into each other and, you know, players can get hurt. They can tear their ACLs. They can. Meanwhile, we have so many fields with just god awful turf. And don't worry about that, though. Worry about the goofy tackle. But yeah, it's like, well, I mean, let's just ban the number of cuts a running back can take to help, you know, keep players from running back across the field. And, you know, then you'll help eliminate blindside blocks, which are also, it just kind of keeps going. And at this point, you have to start feeling bad for defensive players that have to almost second guess what they're doing at any given moment to make sure that they're not finding a new way to get penalized. They can't hit too low. They can't hit too high. They can't hit when someone's not looking. You know, they can't hit when someone's running in the opposite direction. It's just, and now they have to figure out what else to do, something else to do with their momentum after they hit a player from the side. You know, just flop yourself down and hope for the best. You know, I don't know. It just seems a little silly. And I know a massive amount of people agree with that. And I'm sure there's people that don't agree with, you know, that did agree with banning it, that don't agree with the flack it's catching. But it just seems like it's, I don't know, just a little too much. Like, it sounds like people that didn't play football trying to dictate how people play football. And it's like, come on, you should be able to do something else. Oh, yeah, well, you get down here and do it and tell me how easy it is to do something else. So anyways, on the other end of the spectrum, kind of seems cool, but maybe a little more divided, I guess you could say, is the new kickoff rule, which I don't know. I think I kind of like it. And you know, bear with me. Let's have a discussion. Guys, come back, sit down, come back over here and sit down. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about this. Look, anyways, I think that the new kickoff rule seems kind of cool. It seems drastically different. So, I mean, it may not work. There may be things we don't know. The XFL did it. That's kind of where they got the inspiration. And Matt Maiocco of NBC Sports Bay Area brought up a funny point that this was apparently the first Super Bowl in NFL history where there was not a single kickoff return. So that's where that's where the problem starts, is that a kickoff, especially nowadays when a huge part of your kicker, a huge part of like the reason you want them is because they have a big leg and just boot it out of the end zone, eliminating any possible returns. Now that's just not even an option. It is, but it doesn't benefit you. So the balls, if you haven't looked it up, look it up. It's cool. It's interesting. The ball is kicked from the 35. The kicking team lines up nowhere near the kicker. They line up at the opponent's 40. So what is that? 25 yards away from the kicker. The receiving team has to line up anywhere between like the 35 and their 35 and 30. And seven of them have to be on the 35-yard line. So you can get a stagger, basically a five-yard stagger, with seven of them required to be at the 35. And neither of those units can move until the ball touches either a player or it lands in that landing zone. And the landing zone is the 20-yard line to the goal line. If any kick goes shorter than that 20-yard line, the receiving team gets the ball at the 40. So that would be a big mistake. And any kick that goes into the end zone, or any kick that goes into that zone, that 20-yard zone, has to be returned. Any kick that goes into the end zone, the opponents get the ball at the 30. And if the ball lands in the 20-yard zone and then rolls into the end zone, the opponents get the ball at the 20. So there's kind of like the where a lot of the skill is going to come in, is kicking that kick, getting it to land and in anywhere in that zone and roll into the end zone. You know, kind of like the opposite of a punt. You know, you want it to land close to the end zone and then stop there. Whereas it looks like a safe bet for this return will be to get it to land in the zone and roll into the end zone. And so you're going to see receiving teams probably have it, you know, two returners back there to try and keep this from happening. You're going to have kicks that are no longer like hang time, booming, big leg kicks. You know, you want something that is up and down quickly, and you could possibly pinpoint a gap in the coverage and land it in that 20 yards and then force them to return an awkward kick, or it goes into the end zone and they have to start from the 20. So, I mean, as of right now, kickoffs, I mean, this changes everything in terms of what you valued in a kicker and what you valued in special teams players and what you valued in returners and you know, the what looks and it looks like player returners are going to be much less susceptible to injury this way, because the biggest value and the reason they created this is you don't have players running at each other from 30 to 40 yards away full speed. You don't have returners running into guys that are running. You don't have returners running full speed into guys that are also running full speed at them. You know what I mean? The start of the return, once the returner catches it, very much looks like a running play from where the running back is way further back. You know, and it's interesting to look at. I'm not saying it's the answer, but it does seem pretty interesting. You know, and for the 49ers, they were one of the few teams that voted against it. There are any number of reasons why they were one of the few teams to vote against it. I mean, one of the things that I immediately thought of was all of a sudden one of Jake Moody's greatest strengths has been rendered completely useless. Not completely useless, but mostly useless. Like, he had a big leg, and he can get touchback after touchback after touchback, unless, of course, they were trying to kick it short. And now all of a sudden that's not valued. You want a kicker that can place this kick, you know, that can kick it accurately into a void, you know, and maybe make it a tough return or maybe make it a no return as long as it's landing in that 0 to 20 yard range, you know, and now that completely changes Jake Moody's kickoff skill set and what he's going to need to be able to do. A powerful leg isn't as important, and maybe accuracy will be prized now. Think of it this way. In the past, a kickoff was like a driver off the tee. Now you're chipping on the green, you know, a completely different skill set. And maybe chipping's not a good example because that's very short. Maybe we're talking, you know, we're irons in now. It's we're going from a par five to a par three where you need accuracy. Much more than you need distance. That's the best example I can give you. And I hope you appreciate that example because I feel like it's a strong one. So, you know, the 49ers invested a lot of money into players with special teams backgrounds so far this offseason. Maybe that, you know, did they vote no because the players that they invest in were players that they considered strong at the old way of doing kickoffs, or maybe they saw this coming and the players that they paid money for, they believe will offer more value in terms of this new form of a kickoff. You know, cause I mean, think about it. Kickers in terms of a big leg aren't nearly as important. Gunners that can outrun coverage and be physical at the point of attack might not be as important, but they still might have a way to use that skill set. Do offensive linemen get involved now that the players are so close together and you're treating this, it almost looks like an offensive play. And to me, watching these kickoff returns, there's some serious scheming involved. And we've seen kickoff returns and kickoffs with a ton of scheming and with very unique ways of you know, make it a play, you know, pitches and all this stuff, laterals, whatever. But this to me seems like you could start to implement, you know, some of the blocking schemes that are in normal running plays and some of it could get interesting. And again, I'm not saying it's better, but consider what we had very recently, which was essentially a useless play. It meant nothing. In most cases, it was just kicked into the back of the end zone and that was it. It was just a formality. The play meant nothing. It just had to be done because that's what the rules say. So at the very least, now this new kickoff rule gives us something to look at and something to happen. And a play can be made in both directions. And, you know, field position can be lost or gained and all sorts of stuff. So I think at the very least, it's going to be interesting. Will it be better? We'll see. But again, like when I say, will it be better? Like, better than nothing that we had, you know, when most of the cases there was no kickoff. So Pretty interesting. I look forward to seeing it at the very least. I look forward to the change. I look forward to the difference, and I look forward to seeing how teams adapt to it and what creative ways teams come up with taking advantage of it and the way the kickoff changes. It'll be fun to see. It'll be fun to see. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know if anybody out there shares my point of view. Maybe you're not looking forward to it, and if you had a microphone right now, you'd be able to give me all sorts of good reasons. That's fine. But I'm not like passionate about it or anything. I think it's just going to add an interesting aspect to the game that we haven't had in quite some time. Onside kicks are no longer a surprise. You kind of have to say you're doing one before you do it. So that's something. But and that was, you know, no big time news coming from the owners' meetings. John Lynch denied any trade talks whatsoever revolving around 49ers wide receiver Brandon Ayuk. And even then, the few things we've gotten about the Jaguars and the Steelers never really seemed like they were worth getting spun up over. We talked about them, but they never were like being reported from like any bigger names. And I'm not trying to discredit the people that did say something, but you know things are serious when the big guys start talking about it in most cases. And they never did. Brandon Ayuk had a funny social media post basically using emojis to say money talks, money talks, bullshit walks, right? I feel like I've got that backwards now. Let me just Google it. Ayuk, obviously that's an expression. I'm just searching Ayuk bullshit. Trade target calls out. Yeah. The funny, this headline says trade target calls out bullshit general manager. Trade target calls out bullshit comments by one general manager. Okay. I mean, that's not what he's saying. He's saying money talks, bullshit walks. He's not necessarily saying that John Lynch's comments are bullshit. He's just saying that speak with your money is all he's saying. That's just a funny headline. The fact that that's the first headline, that Brandon Ayuk is calling John Lynch bullshit, like that's hilarious. It's not necessarily like that. Folks, this is all just business as usual in 2024 when it comes to trade talks and not trade talks, excuse me, contract extensions and players getting paid and unfollowing teams on social media and tweeting cryptic messages and tweeting Mike Tomlin. You know, like, it's all bullshit. And it's just a player attempting to garner any leverage they can get in a situation where they don't have a lot of leverage. And yes, Ayuk could just choose not to show up if the 49ers want him to play on his fifth-year option. The 49ers could also find Ayuk into oblivion, and they've chosen not to do that in favor of extensions in the past with other players. But it's all just part of the game. It's just the way this shish goes nowadays. We've talked about it quite a bit now on the pod about the fact that the 49ers are getting ready to pay Brock Purdy a lot of money. Jed York talked about it. You know, if you're paying your quarterback a lot of money, it's a good problem to have, unless it's the last quarterback you had in Jimmy Garoppolo. That became not a good problem to have. And the coolest way, the most ridiculous way to give your quarterback more reason to struggle than necessary is to get rid of, by far and away, his favorite target in Brandon Ayuk. So that's why I'm just not getting spin up over it about it. If the 49ers know they've just, for lack of a better term, struck gold with Purdy, then the worst thing you could do at this point is to just give away his favorite targets. And yes, could the 49ers trade Ayuk and find a receiver that's capable of giving that same production? Sure. But is that the game you want to play? I don't know. You know, I think the 49ers, with getting rid of guys like Arik Armstead, extending somebody like Charvarius Ward seems prudent. Maybe that'll happen at some point. Again, Javon Hargrave's contract situation gets real weird next year. That's just something I'm looking at. His post-June numbers. So again, I have no real reason to look at this other than looking at contracts and seeing which ones could be gotten out of in ways that would not hurt the team. You know, like you look at these contracts and you're like, okay, which player could they lose, save a lot of money, and maybe not feel that impact horribly? And so I landed on Javon Hargrave, who I think the 49ers, if you asked them in private, would probably say his last season was a little bit of a disappointment, given how much he's being paid. But next year, if he were released with a post June 1 designation like they did with Armstead, they would owe $7 million and they'd save $20 million. So just mentioning that. So anyways, those are the things that the 49ers are going to have to do in order to create space for a guy like Brandon Ayuk and Purdy's eventual contract. So that's just the way shit goes. And all the rumors and all the tweets and all the social media posts and all the seemingly discontent. John Lynch said they're talking to Ayuk's guys. They're trying to figure out what's going to make it work. And it would surprise me if it didn't happen. It would surprise me if Ayuk's not here for the long term. It surprised the hell out of me when they traded DeForest Buckner. They probably regret that. But this is just the way it goes. And I don't think any of it's worth getting crazy about. You know, we're less than a month away from the NFL draft. We're going to start getting into that here on Striking Gold. I'm going to start having some guests on here that know a lot more about certain prospects than I do. That being said, I got to start doing my homework too. I always watch receivers, and the 49ers aren't necessarily, they could be in the market for a receiver. So yeah, I'll start looking into it. Start to kind of, this free agency's dying down. Time to start getting into the draft. One of my favorite times of the year. And I'm going to try and put some time into these prospects. That way we can talk about them here on Stricken Gold. All right. Stricken Gold. We've already struck. And no more striking. Anyways, I'm sorry. I apologize. So what I don't apologize for is all of you folks. And the thanks I have for you listening to the podcast. Making it what it is. Can't have it without you. If you guys want to leave me a little more support, whatever app you're listening to, leave us a 5-star review. If you want to go a little bit further, then add a question or a comment in that 5-star review, and we'll talk about it here on the pod. I'm surprised more people haven't taken advantage of that. You know, throw a question in there. Let's talk about it. All right. That's it for today. Hope y'all enjoy, you know, Striking Gold. Let's do this. I think that probably the next time we're on here, we'll start getting into draft content, where the 49ers can go with that first round pick, players on the board that are within range. Should they trade up? Should they wait? We'll look at, what I want to do is look at other NFL analysts' mock drafts and see how the board falls and where the 49ers could do some maneuvering. Not that that always holds true, but it's always fun to look at and see, well, if this is how it went, when could the 49ers trade up? Stuff like that. But, all right, everybody, I appreciate you so much. For another episode, I'm Rob. This is Striking Gold, brought to you by PrizePicks, and we're signing out.